Thank you for tuning in today. This is Friday, and this is the day we do Mythbusters. Our co-host is Chris Rossini. And Chris, welcome to the program today.
Hello, Dr. Paul. Great to be with you.
Good. What is going to be our subject?
Well, today we're going to talk about an error that many Americans make, and that's to believe that government is there to prevent us from making mistakes and shield us from risk. And their policies, when they implement them, actually create more risk and reckless risk-taking and something called moral hazard. So we'll talk about today, and we'll start with probably the biggest one because it affects every one of us, and that's the FDIC. So if you could start by talking about why the FDIC was created and how it led to big risk-taking with the banks and moral hazard.
Well, it was created after it was realized the Federal Reserve was very inefficient. The Federal Reserve was created in 1913. They inflated to fight the war in World War I. And then there was a boom in the 20s, and then that ushered in the Depression, and everybody knew, well, the Fed's not doing that great a job. There were ups and downs before due to statewide and local inflation, but here it was done nationally, and then they had a lot bigger problem than they realized. So one of the very first things that Roosevelt did in 1933, that's just a couple months after he was sworn in, he started the FDIC, and that is to try to cover up the mistakes. They didn't try to say, well, why are there mistakes? Why is there a malinvestment? Why is there too much debt? Why does there have to be corrections? Instead of saying that, they said, well, we have to have the Fed because they're the lender of last resort, and they have to protect the banks and the business people, and that's why we have the Fed. But since it didn't work too well and people would have runs on the bank, they had to reassure the individual depositors and the bankers, of course, and protect them and say that, well, we're going to give you insurance. So if the bank runs out of money, which they always do, technically speaking, with fractional reserve, because there's always demands three or four or five times for the same dollar that's in the bank. So it doesn't make any sense unless you fool the people. Well, the people weren't fooled, and that's why they went to get their money out of the bank in the Depression. But they didn't want it to happen again, so they were trying to protect it. So they invented this thing called the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and it does pace things over a bit, but what it does is just prolongs the need for the correction, and we've been living that way ever since until we've gotten to this point where the FDIC has done a relatively decent job in guaranteeing deposits, but they guarantee the malinvestment, the debt, and the problems just keeping worse, and here we are. Huge deficits that we finance in this manner, and we do this with it's essentially no interest at all, and everything is insured. People are pleased, but what they can't do is insure value when they go back in and take the money. It might not be worth as much, but then again, it really doesn't even protect the people that it's supposed to protect. It protects the banks and business people because the process continues. But we know so clearly from this last recession that the average person was really hurt. They lost their mortgages, lost their houses, and lost their jobs. So they were hurt to a great deal. And yet now we have nearly half of our population that are not gainfully employed. Oh, yes, the unemployment rate is very low, but we have 100 million people out of the workforce. So the problems are out there, and all one has to do is read the business news and realize how many people really, how precarious of a situation we have. But it's this illusion that there's insurance. The government ensures that something will be there. Well, the only way you can have real market insurance is first, you have to have a sound currency, and the people have to, if you're going to use substitutes for gold, the banks have to hold the gold. And, of course, they have to be trustworthy. It has to be there. So that would be one way to do it. The other thing is in a free market, you would probably have private insurance, and the private insurance company would come in and say, this bank is sound. They have reserves there, and it's safe to invest there, but it would be a business decision by an insurance company that's, reputation is online. And if they give that a stamp of approval, then the customers would think that's going to be a lot better than if the government gives the stamp of approval. Just recently, the banks did this major yearly review of to find out it was the stress test, to find out if the banks are really doing this. And they all passed with flying colors, with the assumption, of course, that if problems come in, what they hold in reserves is nothing compared to what the demands would be. But once again, it's the guarantee the government will print the money and insure everybody. It doesn't work. It's not working. And yet they live in this dreamland that is the solution to the Federal Reserve mistake. It's just give government insurance, which is based on fraud.
Right. The next assurances that government makes, whether it be medical or even flood, we'll talk about the flood part. Let's say you live in Florida or Louisiana, and you take a risk and build a house on the water right where the hurricanes will come in. And if something happens, the people all the way across the country via federal aid in like Maine or something have to pick up the bill for your risk. Is this a right way to live, Dr. Paul?
No, it's the wrong way. It encourages bad behavior and taking risk that the person who built the house is not at risk, but the people who don't get to build it, are at risk. And these, for the most part, these are people to buy property right on the beach is expensive. So, high-income people get protected by low-income people who have to pay this off if there is a flood. And what happens is there's more building done where they shouldn't be building. If it were private insurance, they would say, and this is the reason they had a government insurance, flood insurance, and windstorm insurance, is because the rates were too high. Well, the rates were high because it was dangerous. So if the government does it, they lower it and people build and they make it worse because more concrete gets put down, the floods get worse, and so they encourage this behavior. And then they come in and they say, oh, we've bailed you out twice, three times, so you're not doing right. So what we need are more regulations. We need to regulate mortgage companies, and we need to tell where the builders can do and all the development. So the federal government comes in, and they use that as an excuse to do all the regulating to try to iron out the problems of making the mistake of a guaranteed insurance program. But that is not insurance. They're eliminating the principle of risk, whether it's flood or windstorm or medical care or whatever. It's not measuring risk. Matter of fact, it distorts it where risk is not a problem. The risk becomes not the person having the house. They're not at risk. There's still the risk that is passed on to somebody else. So the person who acts out and builds these houses or gets the medical insurance or whatever, it is not insurance. It's welfare. And they'd be better off if they just admitted it was welfare rather than saying, well, this is insurance, and we'll tell the insurance company what they have to insure. So, for the most part, I live on the Gulf Coast, and we do know that this, matter of fact, is just a tropical storm just went in, not too far from us. Could have been a hurricane, but you can't wait until the week the hurricane comes in and say, oh, looks like a hurricane out there. I'm going to go buy my insurance. They at least say, well, you have to get it, before that. But on medicine, the whole issue, the big fight going on with Obamacare now is who's going to take care of people who have had prior conditions. Well, that's a problem that comes from how insurance is manipulated and paid for through the tax code, and business people get the tax deduction. So they mess the whole thing up, but then they put the burden on the insurance companies that you have to take care of anybody, even if they're 32 years old, never had insurance, and they come down with cancer. Well, I need insurance. And they go out and they have to give them insurance. Of course, Obamacare tried to correct that by taking young people who shouldn't have to pay so much on insurance and pays huge amounts. And then it comes up with this silly notion that people who don't use drugs have to pay for the treatment of people who do use drugs. People who are 65, 70 years old, people who aren't having children have to pay OB care. It just one problem leads to another. One regulation usually creates two new problems, and they never stop and say something is wrong here. No, they just come off and they argue about what regulation should be put on. So it's a very dangerous situation just because they accept this principle that government insurance can substitute for what they're doing. But it's not insurance. It's just government intervention to cover up the mistakes that they themselves have created, whether it's monetarily or some type of government program. This is certainly what happened in the housing program. We had, so much money printed and interest rates were so low. Everybody deserves a house. We had Community Reinvestment Act. We built the bubble and then the insurance would be there. And of course, the mortgage holders got bailed out and the banks got bailed out, except there were some people who suffered the consequence of this. The market is not perfect. Insurance is very important. A market can't work without the benefit of a true insurance policy that, can scientifically, in a way, measure risk. And they have to cover themselves, and that's why they have to have cooperations among insurance companies to cover everybody. But that's been worked out, but we're totally destroying this. And the bigger the economy gets and the more intervention it is, the more risk there is, so the more government you have to protect it. It was a guarantee about student loans. Oh, yeah, you're going to get a good education. You can pay this back. It turned out that the education wasn't worth much and there weren't any jobs. Now there's $1.3 trillion and it's all been guaranteed and somebody would pay for it, but it's not going to be the students that own this. They're already not paying the bills, so somebody's going to suffer. But that much money wouldn't have been loaned if it hadn't been made available. The moral hazard was making this money available and guaranteeing these loans to the people who were making these loans. So there will be some bailouts, but it's best government stay out of the business of making economic decisions.
The next group that loves government assurances and insurances are crony corporations, politically connected corporations, not legitimate entrepreneurs out there, but those who get close to government. And they seek to new markets overseas or even at home. And if things go well, they profit. But if things don't go well, they also have their government and taxpayer at their back. So if you could talk about that, and the Export-Import Bank comes to mind, and if you could explain how that leads to moral hazard.
Yes, the whole financial system is based on protecting big corporations and the big banks to encourage them to take risk because the Fed will come to their rescue. They do this by printing a lot of money and keeping interest rates low and having the lender of last resort there to protect. And in the meantime, they can make profits and stash them away someplace, maybe overseas or who knows where, and have huge salaries. The biggest problem what I see with this is that it's corrupt, but free market are blamed for this. They say, oh, it's capitalism that's doing this. It's free markets. And you hear the socialists just chiming in. This is what these libertarians want. No, it's not what we want, because this is crony capitalism. And they want more of this because they're always arguing for this case. The Ex-Im Bank is a big boondoggle for big business because you literally subsidize exports. Well, that's good. That's good for business people and good for union high-paying jobs, and that happens. But it's artificial. It's artificial. It doesn't put pressure on our companies to be the most competitive. And they say, well, other countries do that, and they subsidize it. Well, if they're going to subsidize the competition, that means the people there will suffer. But the Export-Import Bank is one. But there's another one. That's this, in a way, not quite as bad as OPIC, which is the Overseas Private Investment Corporation. Ex-Im at least says we're trying to export something, but it's artificial and we shouldn't do it. But OPIC is a guarantee that if you go overseas and start a business and there's economic and political problems, your company can get insured by the American taxpayer if they run into trouble. And of course, you know, if we have an investments in country, we usually send our military, notoriously in Central America and around the world. That's why our military exists many times, is to protect our national interests. Well, their financial interests is what they are. So that process, continues. But there's a tremendous benefits with this system because, of contracts. They get many type of contracts, not only military contracts, but the various contracts, and these are all guaranteed by government. That is the reason why this system is, incestuous in the manner that all big business and banks are really running the show, and the little guy gets a bad deal. And that's why we're in the mess we're in today, because I think it's safe to say that half the people in this country are having a lot of problems. They don't have enough income to rent their houses and this sort of thing, even though the statistics they pour out says, oh, everything is rosy, there's no unemployment, and that sort of thing. But no, I think the problems come from this whole idea that there should be no risk. Everybody should have an easy time. The government is there to take care of us. They can stimulate things. They can turn inflation off when we need to. One thing they have found out, though, in the last 8 years, they can't turn it on when the market's not ready for it. And no matter how $4 trillion we've created and zero interest rates hasn't stimulated the economy. So they should wake up and say, there's something seriously wrong with our monetary and our economic policies.
Yes, finally, let's talk about an idea that's been percolating for decades on the left, and they're just always pushing for it, and sometimes you'll see a tech billionaire come out in support of it, and that's a universal basic income is what they call it. Basically, that the government should provide an income for everybody, no matter what, just because they're breathing. If you could please explain how this is a breeding ground for moral hazard to close our show.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, but we have to admit this is already going on. If you don't work right now, you can get food stamps, you can get housing assistance, you can get welfare benefits, you can get Medicaid. So there is a minimum guarantee, so we already have that problem. But it's always pretty impressive that the billionaires come along and say that we have to do this. I think there might be a little bit of guilt with these billionaires, but, well, we're so rich, but we better look at least like we really care about people, and there seems like a lot of wealth, so we'll just do this. But no, I think it's a gross distortion. It just encourages people to do more of the wrong thing. But let's say you give a guaranteed income, I'll just throw out a number, $1,000 a month to live. And people say, oh, that's good, I can live on that. Well, what happens to the jobs that a person could make $800 a month and we had no inflation, we had a sound economy? Who would work for $800 a month and lose their $1,000 benefit? So you'd have to have technology really energetic to replace those people who won't work, at $800. So it distorts things. And this is the problem. This guaranteed business of safety, the guarantee that you can always be taken care of. I think it goes over into the social things too. People want a guarantee that they are never insulted. they want protection in a social way. We can't say, if you say anything, you can be in trouble. So it is this socioeconomic Marxism that we're facing, and it created a lot of mess. And everything that is done in the name of this perfect safety and perfect protection is done in the name of tyranny, tyrants, people wanting to take care of things, authoritarianism. But if they want to look to what the opposite should be, is what we like to advocate, and that is free markets, individual freedom and liberty. And if you want guaranteed, not guaranteed, but if you want insurance, a much better insurance in a marketplace, you need to have gold as money. Now, that's freedom that could protect you. And you need free market insurance rates that measure risk. But individuals will iron out the difficulties, and we will will not prop up the bad people. So I think this is an important issue, and I think the problem is going to be around a while, but this system that we have currently, I think, is coming to an end, and we're going to have an opportunity to bring some common sense to people, because right now it's pretty disgusting what is happening. But anyway, Chris, I want to thank you very much for being with us today on Mythbusters.
Thank you, Dr. Paul.
And I want to thank our viewers today for tuning in to this program, and I invite you to come back soon to the Liberty Report.